Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. It's a rare show today because Ipswich Town didn't play at the weekend. It's also a rare show because it's just two of us today. Yours truly, Mark Heath, and the Funk Doctor, the Doctor of Thugonomics, Stuart Watson. Stu, we're going to be flying as a duo today. Ross is off. AJ's got the sniffles. He's failed a late fitness test. He fears that his throat won't make it through. And obviously, we don't want to harm those golden vocal cords that he's got. So it's just the two of us, mate. How are you feeling about that? I mean, if we're honest, it's the best two.
Wow. Funk Doctor, I like that. That's my first thought of the podcast. Yeah, I think Alex's vocal cords are insured to a pretty high value, aren't they? As we know, a former choir boy. Mm-hmm. He's working on the mailbag jingle. Shame we can't get the latest on that today. But, you know, we've got to make sure he's tip-top.
Maybe that's why he's actually cried off, because he's worried about the big debut of the mailbag jingle that he's been working on. Because I haven't actually spoken to him, so I haven't heard his voice. He's just sent me a message. So there we go. We'll see. Well, hopefully we'll get more on that as it happens, friends. Stewie, first of all, we're going to do a big mailbag show today. There's my phone picking up me calling you Stewie and thinking it's Siri. We're going to do a big mailbag show today because clearly there's not a lot to talk about on the Ipswich Town front. But I want to talk about, first of all, friend, a big milestone that I noticed you hit over the weekend. Now, I guarantee you haven't noticed it, or if you have, you're going to pretend you haven't. 20,000 followers on X, Stuart Watson. Who's the big news now?
Did I not have that already? My look of surprise. No, I genuinely didn't know that. That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what, mate? I was thinking about this. I went to a place called Islay a few summers ago, which is one of the islands in the Inner Hebrides off the coast of Scotland, famous for producing the best whiskey in the world. Beautiful island. If you ever get a chance to go there, go there. Unbelievable place. That, my friend, that island has a population of around 4,000. So you have five times as many followers as people who live on one of the most famous whiskey producing islands on earth. How does that make you feel?
That makes me feel super. My wife is always quick to sort of bring me down to earth with stuff like this. We were watching a program the other night. She sat there sort of looking up the various actors and actresses involved in it.
Yeah.
And then sort of goes, this person here's only got five. That actor that I really like, he's only got 5,000 followers. You've got more than that, but said in like a really indignant manner. Like that's ridiculous that you have got more. So, that's always quite humbling.
Does she not appreciate what a big deal you are, Stu?
Exactly. I tell her that every day.
Yeah. She's lucky to cohabit with you.
Agreed.
Yeah. Excellent. I fit the nail on the head there. In fact, if you add the respective followings of myself, AJ and Ross up, I don't think you even come to half of the tremendously large fandom that follows you. And quite right, Stu. I think that's only correct. So congrats on hitting that milestone.
Thank you.
I know secretly you'll be well chuffed. Friend, we're going to do my
pay rise.
You don't get a pay rise, I'm afraid. No. If only that was linked to social media activity, we'd be squids in. Friends, we're going to do mailbag today. Before we get to that, I want to talk about what's happened in the Championship over the weekend, a bit of FA Cup stuff, obviously. But first of all, I was going to ask this question to kick off the show when I thought it was going to be three of us. It's actually come in as a mailbag question anyway from our old friend Ian Wallbank, who wants to know what we did with our free weekend without an Ipswich Town game to worry about. As I said, I was going to ask that anyway. So I ask that to you now, Stewie. What did you do? You had a rare weekend off. What did you get up to?
I was dragged around the shops of Bury St Edmunds on Saturday. That was Saturday morning.
Yeah. Anything particular on the shopping list? Was it?
No, not for me. I'm just the entertain the child while Mrs. Watson is in and out of changing rooms and things like that. So, nothing thrilling. And sat on the A14 for an hour while that little bit between Woolpit and Bury was at a standstill. Yeah.
That's bad, isn't it? Bury, though, what a beautiful little town. Mm. Stewie, wouldn't you agree?
I would agree.
It's a fantastic place. Do you know what I did, Stewie, this weekend? We were away Friday night. I took the Mrs. Heath away for a night in Norfolk, a place called Clay Next to Sea. We play the Georgian Dragon there, highly recommended. Also, my friend, as a complete opposite to you, I live my life by lists and goals, and I make a list at the start of every year of things that I want to achieve that year. And one of them this year was improve myself. I know you're looking at me going, what? Improve yourself, Heath. You've already got $1 million smile. You know pretty much everything. You've got the physique and body fat percentage of a man half your age. I'd say correct, Watson, but I can improve myself intellectually by learning a new language. So that's what I've started doing this weekend. I'm learning Italian. 15 minutes a day.
Duolingo,
absolutely. Yeah.
It won't last.
It will. Absolutely it will, because I'm planning to be fluent in about 6 weeks or so. So yeah.
Well, we can put that to the test on the pod, can't we?
Absolutely. I was hoping again AJ would be here today, obviously, because he's a polyglot. A man who speaks many languages. So I was hoping to put that to the test, see if he knows any Italian. I could conversate with him. At the moment, my friend, I can introduce myself, I can tell you where I'm from, and I can order a croissant, an ice cream, or a coffee with milk and sugar up there with the best of them, Italian-wise. So there we go.
Gestures and you're halfway there.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever wanted to learn a language, improve yourself in that manner?
I know my limits. So I'm all in, or it's all or nothing with me. So I know that I wouldn't have the staying power with something like that. Like everyone, wouldn't it be nice to learn the language? Wouldn't it be nice to play a musical instrument? I don't know if I'd be able to have the time or the willpower to stick with something like that. So fair play to you if you do.
You're too busy writing books and stuff, aren't you, mate?
Wow.
Incredible, tangible things that you achieve. Whereas I'm spending 15 minutes a day speaking into my phone in a corny Italian accent. But as I say, I'm going to stick with it. I'm also going to Portugal in the summer, so I'm going to learn some Portuguese before I go. I'm going to widen my horizons language-wise very much. Siri, should we talk about what happened over the weekend on the football front? Because I can tell you're bored of this conversation. Should we talk about what happened in the Championship, friend? Because obviously all eyes were on a couple of teams in the Championship. Leicester City beat West Brom. I don't know if you saw any of this game, Stewie. My wife's a Leicester fan, so we watched it all. Very lucky Leicester were to win that game. Hamza Chowdhury, 3 goal line clearances. West Brom hit the bar as well. They missed numerous chances. On another day, that game could have been 5-2, 6-2 to West Brom. But Leicester win, and I guess the big headline, Southampton lose. Upset, 96th minute winner at Cardiff, which again now leaves them climbing a mountain just when it looked like they were back in the race. They look like they're going to be drinking in the Last Chance Saloon when they play at Leicester on Tuesday night. And of course, if Leeds lose tonight, Leicester could get promoted tomorrow night, Stu. Your thoughts on all that exciting news?
Yeah, Leicester game. Didn't watch all of it live, but seeing the highlights, read plenty about it. Sounds like it was a frenetic game that could easily have gone the other way, as you say. Sounds like there was quite a lot of nerves in the Leicester atmosphere, understandably so, but maybe that's the sort of result that will kind of settle down their recent anxiety. And I think now, and we'll probably get on to, I think, in the mailbag sort of debate about what's needed and who's going to get over the line. I think Leicester have got 1 foot in the Premier League now, looking at their fixtures left and the lead that they've got. Southampton, was looking, following the results during the afternoon, thought that's another one that's gonna go by, and then had a little look an hour or so after the final whistle and was pleasantly surprised to see how that one had finished. And I think that probably just about kills Southampton off now, given that the games are running out. So for me, it's Ipswich versus Leeds now for that other automatic promotion spot.
Russell Martin was not a happy chappy after that defeat. Called it unacceptable. Said we've done ourselves serious harm and now we've got to bounce back. And if our season's extended, so be it. We have to do that. Is this a good thing for town, though, Stewie, that Leicester, as I say, could even be promoted tomorrow night? Southampton looking like they're going to be out of it. Is that a good thing, do you reckon, for town?
Leicester winning is not a good thing for Ipswich. No, we'd have liked more people to be catchable. And Southampton's an interesting one, isn't it? I think you could have made an argument that them sort of being more in it for the top two would have kept them extra motivated going into games against Leicester and Leeds away. Maybe they'll be out of it by the time the Leeds game comes on the final day of the season. And if Ipswich are battling Leeds going into that final day, maybe it would have been good to have Southampton kind of fighting on that front as well. But look, it's taken them out of the equation. So I guess that can't be a bad thing. It's now looking like a case of 3-2. As I say, I think Ipswich are probably in a two-team fight now. Mm. But we knew all along, for all the debate about how these games could go, et cetera, it's in Ipswich's hands, isn't it? Which is the main thing. Win all their games, they're up. It was as simple as that before any of these matches were played.
And it remains the case. Leeds, of course, play twice now before Town kick a ball again at Hull. Play tonight, Middlesbrough. Tough game, and I think it's QPR on Friday night, isn't it? They play then. We're really at the point of the season where the rubber meets the road, Stu. Very, very interesting from this point onwards.
The psychology of it is fascinating, isn't it? I think the order of which the teams play. I know there's been a debate in the Premier League about, obviously, when there's a title race, is it best to be the team that plays first over the weekend, or is it best to play last? I guess Kieran McKenna's always kind of said, well, hindsight always kicks in afterwards and think, well, it was better to have it this way, that way. But, you know, Leeds could go and win their next two and really ramp up the pressure on Ipswich. Or, you know, if they do stumble a little bit, then that could, I don't know if that's a good thing for Ipswich or not. If you're suddenly going into your last three going, oh, we've got a margin for error now. We could only need, inverted commas, 6 points or whatever it may be. So you can look at it any which way, can't you? I mean, the Coventry Hull is this week as well. Do Ipswich want, by the time they play both of those teams, they might be out of the top six equation. Is that a good thing that they're sort of demoralised and haven't got anything to play for? Or does it suit Ipswich playing teams that are wanting to take the game to them and attack and have a more open game of football? Don't know. You can come up with all sorts of reasons and explanations and whatnot, can't you?
Absolutely, you can. But as you say, ultimately, bottom line, all in Ipswich Town's hands, whichever way these things happen in the next few days before Town play. Town win their three games in the Premier League, which is remarkable. The other thing that happened football-wise over the weekend, Stu, FA Cup. And since we last spoke, obviously the changes to the FA Cup have been announced. Do you want to pause to get indignant about this? Because obviously there's been a lot of a kerfuffle, people getting very heated around this FA Cup ditching of replays. I saw you tweeted sensibly, as you always do, but quite strongly about it last week. Do you want to chat around that?
Replays, I'll start with the replays. This probably goes massively against the grain of kind of populist opinion. I'm not that bothered about replays going. Maybe it's because of my experiences of covering Ipswich Town over the years. Yeah. I've sat there and gone, somebody just score, either team. Because does anyone really want to go to Preston, for example, is the one that springs to my mind. Oh, great. A week on Tuesday, we've got to go to Preston for a... What was that? That Preston might have been League One at the time. But do you know what I mean? I think it's very easy to romanticise these kind of once a season, at best, fairy tales of a non-league club getting a draw and then going to Old Trafford or whatever, and then that either saving a club as it did with Exeter, thinking back to the early 2000s, I think that was a Man United replay, or simply just giving them the platform to kick on and improve and get momentum, as was probably the case with Lincoln when they beat Ipswich in that replay. They were a non-league club then and now are a very competitive League One outfit. But if you actually sit down and have a look through the replays that we've had this year, I mean, which I did because I'm sad. Port Vale v Burton, Chester v York, Doncaster v Accrington, Salford v Peterborough, Slough v Grimsby, Crewe v Derby, Newport v Barnet, the list goes on. Did anyone inside or outside the game, was there a massive appetite for those matches? Probably not. So that side of it, I'm not too worried about. But it's the way this decision has come about, which I think everyone is. It's like the straw that's broke the camel's back. We've had these kind of various different milestones with the FA Cup over several years that have kind of watered down the great tradition in this country, whether it be semi-finals at Wembley, whether it be kickoff times all over the place, whether it be the final not being the final game of the season, et cetera, et cetera. And it just feels a bit like, I think it's this feeling of kind of the bully boy culture of the big boys that have thrown their weight around a little bit and wasn't their decision to make entirely. There's a lovely graphic of the hundreds and hundreds of clubs that start the FA Cup in those extra preliminary rounds every year. And ultimately, it's come down to sort of a handful of clubs that have kind of pushed this through. So, yeah, it's kind of strengthened my feeling around that super club time that, you know what, if you want to go off and do your own thing, off you go. The English football pyramid would survive and I believe thrive without those clubs, because it's got a big enough product. You only have to look at the attendances up and down the land, down into the, you know, depths of the lower divisions. But I think, you know, it could survive without them.
Yeah, I struggle to give a single F about the FA Cup, I'm afraid, these days. I don't care that the replays have been cancelled. Not bothered. The FA Cup has long since become, as you say, a watered down, almost irrelevant competition, which is sad because a lot of my happiest memories of my early football fandom are linked to the FA Cup, and particularly the FA Cup final. But it feels like the Commonwealth Games now, the FA Cup, but it's something that's fading into obscurity.
It still has its moments, doesn't it? Like Maidstone this year, as we've seen firsthand. And, you know, we'll probably touch on it in a minute. The semi-final yesterday involving Coventry. I don't want to kind of readily dismiss it as being sort of dead, but it's just been like, it's just crept up on it slowly, hasn't it? It's just that
it's not dead. It's just dying. That's what I'd say it is.
And how many of these, we can all get sort of on our high horse and sanctimonious about it, but most of our clubs, whether, you know, most people listening to this are Ipswich fans, but all clubs are making, it's not even just the big boys, are making 10, 11 changes. Go back to Ipswich, going to Manchester United and making 10 changes for, that was a League Cup tie, but it happens in the FA Cup most years as well. The riches involved with, whether it be finishing 8th or 10th in the Premier League, the amount of money that's worth, or promotion or relegation. It's lost its shine over a period of time. And it is sad, because if you're, you know, of a generation, you kind of remember the sort of the build up to the FA Cup was massive. FA Cup final day, you'd sit down and watch all the coverage. I think a lot of it is saturation with coverage as well. There's so much football now. The FA Cup isn't that special game that, you know, I really enjoyed the weekend because I don't have a Sky subscription, so I don't watch loads of football. So when there's a game on terrestrial TV, it's nice that you can sit down and watch it because it's available. And I think there's an element of that as well at times. So times change, rules change within football. Things have to change. There was a time where there was no, you know, the pass back rule, and various different things evolve over a period of time. But yeah, hearing Klopp and Pep sort of moan and whine about fixture schedules, I think any of us who've kind of followed the Football League and the lower leagues always raise a bit of a quizzical eyebrow to that when, you know, we're used to the Saturday, Tuesday schedules and all that sort of stuff.
Do you want to have a small moan about VAR before we move on to mailbag?
About VAR, Kianel. if Ipswich don't get promoted this season, that will seriously be a crumb of comfort to me, that we won't have to deal with that nonsense week in, week out. It's how can you have a competition where it's VAR is used in some games and not others? I just don't see how that is correct. What can I say more than what everyone else has sort of said? It's the thief of joy.
Would you totally can it then, Stu?
Until they can work out how to use it. I mean, it does feel like the horse is bolted now and the genie's out the bottle, and it's hard to, I think they've put so much money into it. I can't see a scenario where they just can it completely. But how long have we been talking about clear and obvious? It's been brought in to clear up the obvious travesties in the game. You know, someone punching the ball into the goal, stuff like that. It's not to draw lines over toenails and things like that. It's and I just don't think, I know people can say, well, look, you can argue as much as you like, but you're either onside or you're offside. I don't think the technology is good enough to clear that up.
Mm.
Where do you freeze the frame when they're that tight? You could roll it back half a millisecond and those lines are different. You look at the lines, it's drawn over one person's foot and it's not over the other. It's that's not football, is it? That's not what we like the game for.
I was reading something actually by someone who obviously thinks that VR is a bad thing, but saying the as you say, the technology isn't actually good enough to use it to that extent, like in terms of the actual kind of the frame rate of the video and stuff, elongates the ball and makes like stuff like that. So it's not actually accurate anyway when you're trying to use it to that minutiae. Yeah. I don't know why, Stu, and I assume you'd be anti this, but I don't know why we can't just adopt the American football model of having three challenges that you can, things you can challenge in a game. And if you've used them, hard luck. You know, they would then surely use them for things that do look like an obvious mistake, you know. And then also the actual way they do that, like in rugby, for example, you hear the conversation. Well, if you're watching, you hear the conversation between the referee and the VAR. And, they, you know, it's very sensible, grown-up conversation between the two of them. And also it's on a big screen as well for the people in the stadium to see what's going on. That seems to be an obvious way of using it. I don't know why football continues to ignore.
Yeah, I think transparency is a big issue. Football's got a long, long way to go with that. When you've seen other sports with referees mic'd up and all that sort of stuff for years, I don't know why it's referees don't do interviews or anything like that. I don't think that helps with various conspiracy theories and various stuff like that. So, that was... I think anyone who watched that moment and the comeback and, you know, that would have been one of the FA Cup stories, you know, as someone who's been following the Championship, I think rooting for Coventry as well. I think from, you know, selfishly from an Ipswich perspective, for them to have been in the final and for them to have that sort of in the back of their minds would have been a good thing for Ipswich going there a week on Tuesday. But, yeah, that will be one of the things if Ipswich can get to the Premier League that I'm not looking forward to at all.
It's going to make your life interesting as well, isn't it, reporting on games in a live scenario. Stu, is there anything else you want to talk about before we do a bit of mailbag, get into the mailbag?
No, I think we've put the world to rights on all of that.
We have, like two grumpy old men in the pub. Right then, do you want football or non-football to begin with?
Non-football.
Non-football. Let me find a good non-football one. Okay, Nigel G, friend of the show, owner of a big fish. He gets a bass. Question for you all except Ross, which is useful because Ross isn't here. What's the best sporting folk show you've ever seen? He does go on then to ask Ross a specific question, but clearly he's not here, so I can't ask him that. The best sporting photo you've ever seen, Stewie? I've got some. Do you want me to roll out?
I think yours is just over your right shoulder, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is the best sporting photo ever taken, which is Muhammad Ali standing over a stricken Sonny Liston in their rematch in the 60s when he just hit him with the famous anchor punch, which felled Liston early in that rematch. And he's standing over him, imploring him to get up. Get up, sucker. That, my friends, is the greatest sporting photograph of all time by some distance. Taken by Neil Leifer, who also took another iconic picture from overhead. You've probably seen this as well. So it's the ring. Ali's just knocked out Cleveland Williams and he's got his hands in the air like this. And you can see it from overhead. It's just like the perfect, you've got the kind of guy on his back in one corner and Ali in the other corner with his hands raised. So two of the greatest sports pictures ever taken. I wanted to get that as an aside, Stu. I wanted to get that as a tattoo. I might take up my entire right arm. I had it designed, everything. Mrs. Heath kiboshed it. She said, if you get that on your arm, I won't be seen with you in public. And as tempting as that was, I then had to turn down the tattoo, which I'd already, as I say, got designed, had lined up. I'd got some sessions booked in.
I remember how close you were to getting to that. Very serious about it.
Other great sporting photos. There's I don't know who took this one, but off the top of my head, there's, I think it was 2013, the Athletics World Championships, where Usain Bolt had just won the 100 meters, and it was in a storm, and there's a picture of him crossing the line, yeah, and there's actually a lightning strike behind him.
Yeah.
The sort of thing that looks like it must be Photoshop, but it actually happened. That's another great sporting photo. Michael Jordan's last shot for the Chicago Bulls against Utah Jazz from behind, with all the Utah Jazz fans already with their head in their hands because they know it's going to go in because it's Michael Jordan. Excellent sporting photo.
Yeah. I think ones that capture kind of a crowd in the background, yeah, that kind of split second in time with kind of jaws dropped. Our very own Steve Waller has got a brilliant picture of that note with Vaz's save.
He did,
recently,
yeah,
against Middlesbrough. And you can, every time you look at it, you can spot a different person in the crowd's kind of reaction as they, as the sort of situation unfolds.
Have you got any more to throw into the mix, Stu?
I'm trying to think if I'm like Derek Redmond, where his father helps him over the line. That's kind of like anything that captures kind of a human interest, an emotional story like that, I think is always special.
There's some great ones I remember as well. But the Miracle at Medina, the Ryder Cup, I remember because I was working that night, and that was back in the day when it was very hands-on with the paper, and trying to choose a picture to kind of encapsulate that for the front of the paper that night, given it was, you know, all the emotion around it, winning it for Seve Ballesteros. There was some amazing pictures around that as well. I remember one, which is the green as a hole, and I can't remember who sunk the winning putt, but it was literally like him with his arms in the air and everyone around the green kind of running towards him. Mm. So kind of mid-celebration, it was fantastic. Anyway, yeah, I could talk about sporting pitches quite a long time because I see a lot of them in this job and they are brilliant. You look like you're looking at something, Stu. Have you found something else?
No, I was just trying to... I remember this conversation. He's no longer with us, sadly, but there's a guy called Ted Blackbrow who was lived in Suffolk, or certainly retired in Suffolk, who was a celebrated Daily Mail sports photographer who went all over the world covering events, and spent a bit of time with Ted doing various features over the years, and I was always fascinated to hear about sort of the art of photography and sometimes going to places where not everyone else is. I think you remember talking about who was the American sprinter drugs cheat in the 80s.
Ben Johnson,
yeah.
Canadian,
apologies. When that kind of broke at the Olympics and everyone there was a shot of him, I think, arriving at the airport, and all the photographers are obviously kind of fighting for position. And I think, Ted managed to get himself in a sort of elevated, climbed up something to get a shot that sort of captured him in a sea of kind of the press pack sort of surrounding him 365 degrees, and got that sort of aerial shot that nobody else got. Remember him telling me about when Snooker did some sort of deal with sort of to do some events in the Middle East, and they set up they got this idea where they got a snooker table out into the desert, and they had to get sort of get chew it in the end. The balls kept sort of, they couldn't get the balls to stay in one position on the table because it's on uneven sand. So they had to get chewing gum to kind of stick the balls into place. And they got, I think, Davis and Hendry to kind of mock up playing on this kind of the vivid shot of the green bays of a snooker table against this kind of nothingness of the desert behind. Was quite a striking image. But
there's another one just sprung to mind, actually. Paula Radcliffe is a famous picture of her. I don't know how famous it is, but I love it. It's her running on her own in a competition. This is when she was a dominant athlete. And it's literally pissing with rain. And it's just her kind of offset against this rain. And for anyone who remembers Paula Radcliffe, that sums her up as an athlete. She was about pain. Like she would put herself in the deepest hole because she had no sprint finish. So she had to win the race going away. So she would put herself into, like I say, this incredible pain zone and could just do it. Some athletes can just do that. And that summed her up as an athlete for me. Great question, Nigel. I could talk about this quite a lot more, as you could probably tell. But we can't do that because we've got things to do. Maddie Reader, Stewie, football question. Hello there, Kings. Bloody Siri. Every time I call you Stewie, my phone goes off. Anyway. Ashton's given you permission to sign any player from this season's championship. Who are you signing and why?
Cool. Archie Gray.
Yeah, it's a good one. He plays right back, isn't he?
yeah, I think he's going to be a real player. Was he 17 when the season started, I think, and he's playing week in, week out for a club the stature of Leeds, and taking it all in his stride. He's played right back, centre mid. I saw him close hand at the EFL Awards recently and was so impressed with the way he kind of handled himself off the pitch as well. So I'm thinking in terms of sort of longevity, if you're giving me a free pass to pick up anybody, I'm thinking what they're going to contribute on the pitch, what they might give you in terms of profit further down the line, he'd be one. In terms of what Ipswich actually needs, I think Adam Armstrong would really sort of add some options to the attack. He's one that Kieran McKenna was very keen on last summer, and we can see why. I think we discussed it recently. He's very unfortunate not to have got himself a place in the championship team of the season. Can play as a central striker, a little deeper, wider as well. I think he ticks all the boxes that Kieran McKenna's looking for. So a couple of options there as well.
I think the best player I've seen, and clearly I've not seen as much championship football as you because you watch every single game, but the best player I've seen this season is Crescencio Somerville at Leeds. He's a sort of player that I think would do business in the Premier League as well. Yeah. So if I'm signing anyone, I'm signing the best player I've seen this season. That's Crescencio Somerville. Let's do another football one, shall we? Before the season kicked off, this is from Sir CW, who I believe is based over in the States. Before the season kicked off, if I've offered you 0 or 1 point v Norwich, clearly Town have got 1 point from their old rivals this season, but automatic promotion, would you have taken that deal?
Yes.
Yes. Every single time. And obviously, although Norwich retained the bragging rights, if Ipswich Town get promoted and Norwich, say, losing the playoff final against Leeds, Daniel Farker, that'd be quite nice, wouldn't it? Any negotiation? This is from Daniel Rocklestew. Any negotiations on Morsey's contract? Isn't it up at the end of the season?
No, it's not up at the end of the season. Yes, he signed a three-year deal when he signed, which was due to be up at the end of this season. But the promotion last year triggered a clause in that contract of an extra year. So he still has one more year to run on his contract. Spoken to him about his future as early as last summer. He said that, you know, he loves it in Ipswich. He's settled. He'd like to finish his career here. There was a bit of talk about him going over to the Middle East.
Yep.
And that interest didn't step up last summer. It didn't happen again in January, but there's a potential there for that still to happen. As far as I'm aware, those negotiations haven't started yet. I think Ipswich, obviously not knowing what division they're in, makes it difficult for too many conversations to start as yet. I know people like Massimo have signed a new contract recently, but he was genuinely out of contract this summer, so that had to be addressed. I'm sure as soon as the final ball is kicked and Ipswich kind of know where they're at, and that will happen. Those talks will happen, and I'm pretty sure there's a deal to be done for Sam Morsy to stay at Ipswich because there's mutual respect and admiration between all parties.
Sticking with the kind of transfer signing, all that kind of stuff, Harvey Davis, the Swedish of Welsh Princes, friend of the show, hope you're well, Harvey, says reports in Turkey claiming we're set to sign John Lundstrom if we get promoted, who's out of contract in the summer at Rangers. He says, does Stu have any more info on it? Seems a bit of a stretch to me and not the usual kind of profile we go for in a player.
No, I don't have any information on that. That's the first I've heard of that link. He's ex-Sheffield United, isn't he? Lundstrom. And how old is John Lundstrom now? When you're talking about profile, 30. So as Harvey says there, it probably doesn't tick the kind of the various profile boxes that Kieran McKenna looks for usually, but if we're talking about, hopefully, you know, Sam Morsy's here to stay, Luongo sign a new contract, Jack Taylor, might be room for maybe one more central midfielder. But well, one to look into, I'd say, Harvey.
Fair enough. Right, in non-football, Graz Manic wants to know, it's pretty much barbecue season. Have you had a barbecue yet, Stu?
Nope.
I've had one. In your awesome juicy bacon cheeseburger, you have to have a form of vegetation in there. What are you going for? She says, I've already got dibs on jalapenos. What veg are you sticking in your burger, Stu? Are you a veg man when it comes to burgers?
It's like salad included.
Lettuce, yeah. I guess tomato. Technically a fruit, I guess, but...
Lettuce and tomato.
I'm going pickles. Are pickles are vegetables, right? They're little cucumbers. I love pickles. I eat pickles out of the jar. I'm just that guy.
Like a gherkin.
Gherkin. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whacking a few of them in there. I'm having that. You're having tomato and lettuce. Keeping it simple, to the point. Classic, traditional. Watson. Robert Enderby. Absolutely. Robert Enderby says, a dance, a knee slide, acrobatics, the seal. What is your favourite style of goal celebration in world football? What's your most memorable goal celebration by an Ipswich Town player? And what was your celebration when scoring a worldie? Three questions there, Stu. You obviously have famously scored a goal in a charity football game, which is quite a big one, which we've talked about before. Very famously. You strike me as very much a Shearer. Single arm in the air. Again, as I just said, traditional, classic. Watson.
Yeah.
Was that your goal?
I feel seen, but first of all, I need to address, I've never heard Sue pronounced the way that you did just now. Enjoyed that.
Sue, isn't it?
Well, that's Sue.
Okay.
But my daughter now, through watching YouTube, has somehow picked that up. That's walking around the house saying that at the moment. Yes, I would be the goal celebrations I like... one of the big reasons I ended up supporting Everton, I think I've told this on the pod, is one of the first games my dad took me to was Ipswich Everton.
Mm.
And I was a bit on the fence as to Ipswich were a bit more local. My dad supported Everton. It's a bit on the fence as a young boy. And Peter Beagrie scored. I don't know if you remember Peter Beagrie, and ran off and did a triple front flip celebration, something acrobatic. And that got me. So I can see how like Amari Hutchinson would really sort of catch young fans' imaginations with that.
Didn't Beagrie actually knacker himself doing that once? I seem to remember he might have hurt his arm or something because he was one of the first to do that kind of really acrobatic celebration, wasn't he? It was quite a big thing at the time.
The ones I thought were really cool was the Cantona chip, and then he stands there, chest out.
Yeah, classic.
Posturing to all four sides with the collar up. That's the celebration I wish I was cool enough to do. But the reality is, as a centre half who got a bit of a nosebleed when crossing the halfway line, if I do score, it's a bit like Harry Clark when he just lost himself, wouldn't know what to do, wheeling left, right, arms flailing.
Yeah.
That's me.
What's your favourite Town player celebration? Got to be Shefky, isn't it? That's the one that immediately springs to mind.
Yeah, swallow dive.
It just always strikes me that must have really hurt as well. I'm amazed he never hurt himself. My favourite goal celebrations, I would say, are... do you remember Baz Savage back in the day? He used to moonwalk in football boots. That was impressive. Obviously, the Ketz Bayer one, the famous angry attacking of an advertising board. Yeah, probably. What is a CU, by the way? Should have realised I've got no idea what that is.
Cristiano Ronaldo sort of leap.
Oh, is that
180 spin and
hands
by the side?
Yeah, not a fan of that.
I don't actually know what it means. SIU, isn't it?
Tell you what, the other thing I really don't like as a goal celebration is this, Stu. That thing that they do. The
heart.
I can't actually do it because my fingers are knackered from years of sport. But the heart thing, I hate that. Anyway, not for me. let's do another football one. Right, Rob Hughes has asked two questions, which is greedy, Stu. I'm going to ask you both of them. You can choose to answer both or just one, or maybe even none. He says, why, given McKenna's play out from the back philosophy, do we, when kicking off, always play it back to Wolfie so he can hoof it to the big fella up front? One. Two. Occasionally during a match when a goal kick is about to be taken, the players of both teams were suddenly all grouped together in a very small area on one side of the pitch. Who gives this mysterious signal and why?
I don't want to answer either.
Okay.
I'm joking. Good question. Do they always hoof it forwards? I'd have to pay more attention to that. I think they probably mix it up a little bit. Yeah. I suppose Kiefer Moore's introduction gives them a different outlet at times. Maybe teams have become sort of wiser to Ipswich wanting to play out from the back in that way. So sometimes you're forced to go a little bit more direct. The whole bunching to one side of the pitch thing is quite interesting. I guess, is it a little bit cat and mouse? They wait to see, I guess, the team that's receiving the goal kick shuffles over to one way to give yourself sort of more bodies in an area, gives you more probability of winning it. And then the opposition has to sort of go with them and shadow them.
You've answered two. Very generous there, Stu. Right, a couple more. Where are we? Oh, that's a good one. Callum Pritchett. It's a good one for you, Stu. Best atmosphere you've experienced at a sporting event? It says West Ham versus Sevilla for me, which obviously if AJ was here, we could ask him about because he's a side hustle in the Hammers. You've been to a lot of football games, Stu, and I'm assuming quite a lot of sporting events generally. Can you, does one atmosphere stand out among all others for you?
Mainly Ipswich, really, has been the bulk of my sporting experiences. And I would have to say the Southampton game recently topped everything that I've experienced covering Ipswich over best part of 15 years. That was absolutely electric in that second half, even before the 97th minute winner, where there was an explosion of noise. So that would be right up there, honestly, in terms of anything I've experienced. On a different atmosphere vibe, the 2012 Olympics, and just the nice feel-good factor around that, a sense of the country all coming together. I went to a few events in London for that. That was great.
What did you do? I didn't realise you'd been to that.
I saw some basketball, I saw some boxing. But yeah, all the volunteers that were greeting people at the train station and just everything about it felt really, really wholesome and positive and felt like a moment in time, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a memorable Olympics. I've got a few. Recently, the atmosphere of the Fabio Wardley fight against Fraser Clark, I would say. I know that's literally the last thing that I've attended as a sporting event, but that genuinely would be up there. That was, A, it was an incredible fight, and B, the atmosphere was properly electric, because I think everyone realised just what they were watching, how special it was. Darren Till's walkout at the first kind of big UFC event in London. He came out at the time to Sweet Caroline, which now obviously is a bit passe, and it's always played at every single sporting/fight event. But that was amazing, hearing like 19,000 people singing along as he came out. At that time was like the big British hope in the UFC. And also going a long way back, I was at Wembley the only time I ever went to the old Wembley to see Cambridge United get promoted from Division 4, as it was back in the day, when they beat Chesterfield in the final and Dion Dublin scored. And I think I was 10 or 11 at the time, that kind of celebration of a side, a local side, getting promoted at Wembley felt like, Lord, you can take me now. I've seen it every, you know, it was amazing as a kid to be part of that, and the celebrations afterwards with fans, you know, it's that feeling of just immense joy and happiness that you get from something like that. Dion Dublin also, by the way, just as an aside, the first autograph I ever got, standing at the side of the pitch in the Abbey Stadium. I think I do still have that somewhere. Right, let's do a few more. Tom Baines, of all the things that have happened this season, what do you think, if you'd said it pre-season, would have been considered the most bonkers claim/prediction? And Tom gets extra points here because he's included a picture of everyone's favourite conspiracy theorist and great intellect, Matt Letizia. Not sporting his tinfoil hat, unfortunately. But yeah.
Have you seen the video? Have you seen the video of Matt Letizia doing one of these videos with a conspiracy theorist? And even he is now starting to realise that he's in too deep, where there's guys coming up with all these claims
like
of certain
Princess
people.
Diana's going to come back or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, I'm in too deep here now, aren't I?
I've made a huge mistake. Yeah. But I mean, Stu, without wishing to blow my own trumpet, I said pre-season that Town would be top of the table, which felt quite a big claim at the time, and it's duly come to pass.
Yeah, you said at some stage in the season, didn't you? And we discussed how many games in that would be relevant. I think we decided on 10.
Admittedly, I didn't think it would be relevant you know, with five games to go or whatever it was when they were then when they were top.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been wild just in itself. I mean, everything about this, if you, so many bits of this scenario, if you'd have outlined it back in our pre-season prediction pods when we were all kind of predicting, I don't know, 8th, 9th,
I think we all
10th.
Said between 8th and 10th as, a, as a finishing. And we'd have been pretty happy with that, I think.
Yeah, which again was probably a little bit of like feeling the afterglow of promotion and wanting to put a, be as optimistic as possible and stuff like that. So if you, I don't know, just everything, the amount of goals scored. Yeah, basically everybody in the squad will score a goal. Hmm. 32 points from losing positions. You just all of these stats. There'll be 17 points clear of Norwich, but still won't have beaten them.
Yeah,
going into the you know into the final three games of the season. Oh yeah, and by the way, the main striker will get injured, and Kiefer Moore will ride in on his white stallion on January transfer deadline day. Do you remember Kiefer Moore? Yeah, he's coming back to save the season. Just
the sheer amount of points they've got.
Yeah.
It stands like record.
Oh, and yeah, they'll break the record for a newly promoted side in the championship as well for points. You know that Southampton team with Lallana and Lambert and all that lot? Yeah, they're going to get more points than them. More points than George Burley's team got in 2000 when they got promoted. Yeah, they're going to get more than that as well. I just would have just got laughed at, wouldn't I? You'd have been dismissed as the ramblings of a madman.
Absolutely crazy. Right then, a few more. Amber Redmond wants a long overdue post-surgery rehab update from Mark, please. Thanks for asking, Amber, because no one ever does. I am still in recovery. I think they said 18 months to full recovery, so I've got a few months left. I'm back running and stuff. I have been told I will be able to resume fighting in due course. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And on that note, I must actually shout out a member of the KOA Army, Tom Bloomfield, who had the same operation as I did a few months before me. And yesterday, remarkably, ran the London Marathon in under 5 hours, which is a very respectable time. Raised, I think, £1,500 for the Derby Rimmer Foundation. Got a hug from Marcus Stewart. That video is on our socials. Tom, that blows my mind because I'm still struggling with very short distances of running. So for you, admittedly, a younger man and a few months advanced in your more advanced in your recovery, but to have trained for the marathon, run all those miles you must have done and then done it, having had the operation that I had and knowing what state my knee is still in. Well, big respect to you, mate. Absolutely huge respect. Very well done. And a tremendous thing to raise money for, clearly.
That video is lovely if you haven't seen it, by the way.
It is,
yeah. The hug from Marcus. Lovely.
It really is. Yeah. Go and see that. It's on our social media on X. Right. One more slightly non-serious question and then a couple about promotion, Stu. Then we can move on. Question from Bono. X-View from the U2, the man with a billion nicknames. Question. In a parallel dimension, you are born with the ability, excuse me, to have a different drink pour out of each finger and thumb on your right hand. That's five drinks if you've got all your digits intact. What five drinks, hot or cold, are you going for and why? I think Bono might have been drinking something when he came up with this question. You can have five drinks to be poured out of your fingers and thumb.
I could spend an entire sort of afternoon pub drinking session with my mates just going through questions like this.
Could you?
That would be me, yeah. Would you rather stuff, just silly things.
Five so what would you choose?
Water.
Yeah, got to stay hydrated, bro.
Tea, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tea.
You having coffee? So that's three gone straight away.
Then you're probably going to, I might allow myself one alcoholic. I'm assuming yours is just going to be five types of whiskey.
No, I definitely have a beer in there. Don't get me wrong.
You put a beer in there as well, yeah.
Yeah.
A beer. I'd probably Erding is my beer of choice at the moment. So if you're going to force me to have one, probably be that.
So we've got tea, coffee, water, Erdinger. Yeah. You got one left.
Milk.
Milk. Really? Do you drink a lot of milk? I suppose it's useful for making the old tea and coffee there, isn't it? But
amount of times you're like, oh, I've got to go down to the co-op to get some milk. We're out of milk. Just unscrew my little finger. Instant milk.
And what are we having? Are we having full fat? Are we having semi-skim? Are we having skimmed? Semi-skimmed. Standard. Right, I'm going, I definitely, I mean, water's a sensible one, but I'm not, I'm not having water. I'm definitely having coffee. I'd quite like to have two different types of coffee, to be honest. I'd like an Americano, like a standard, and also espresso, because I drink a lot of espresso. So that's two just on coffee. Then I'm definitely having a lager. And I'm a proper Neanderthal when it comes to lager. I don't want any of these fancy newfangled ones like Erdinger. Just give me Peroni till the day I die. I'm having Peroni. And then two whiskies, as you say, Stu. I'd probably have Lagavulin, 16-year-old, standard, excellent. What would be my other whiskey? That's a very good question. Ardbeg, Uggadal. It's probably my favourite whiskey. So two Isla whiskies. I was talking about Isla earlier. Lagavulin, 16-year-old, Ardbeg, Uggadal.
You could think about how you could use this to kind of profiteer, couldn't you? You could either go for the full-out like barista hand, where you could just be a one-man barista that can just do all various different coffees.
Five cups at once, yeah.
Or you could be a bartender, couldn't you? You could just have spirits, five spirits.
Potential to make a lot of money off this if you could actually choose. You could choose some of the most exclusive drinks in the world, couldn't you?
You're hired out for stag do's, hen do's, all sorts.
Imagine. Excellent question, Bono. Top of the weekend. Right. We've got a few more just about promotion, Stu. So we'll finish with those because obviously that's basically what we're going to be talking about in the next few days, hopefully. Mm. Little Melon Man, who I believe is still friend of the show. I can't remember.
Tiny Little Melon Man.
We don't hear from him very often. I know Hutchie was talking about disinheriting him, a friend of the show, at one point because we heard from him so rarely. But anyway, I believe he's still in the pantheon of friend of the show. It says, am I alone in being slightly schizophrenic about promotion? We talked about this before, Stu, if I'm honest, but let's talk about it again. I can see it would bring a lot of money, kudos, profile, etc. And it's probably best in the long term. But, he says, I've so much love and respect for the men in the squad, and I'd hate to see them broken up and replaced just yet. So we have talked about it, Stu. I did pose the elephant in the room question a couple of weeks ago about whether it'd be too early for Town to get promoted. And I think we broadly said that if this is a chance to get promoted, you've got to take it.
Yeah.
But it would mean significant impact on the playing squad, you'd imagine.
Yeah, various factors to kind of think, would it be all of that? Is it the land of milk and honey that you kind of, I think with Ipswich have been away from it for so long, you build it up to be something magical in your mind. And it would be amazing to go to all these bigger grounds and to taste all the national exposure and everything that comes with it. But on the flip side, we touched upon it already, VAR, the nonsense of that, the sheer volume of, again, we've seen this year with all the kickoff times being all over the place, and we haven't had that many 3 p.m. Saturday games, but that's a taster of what could be to come. Could get beat quite a lot, and we've really enjoyed the last 2 years, and we've all got used to winning, and we've talked about look at Sheffield United and Burnley this year, and I know Norwich started to get sort of this feeling of Norwich fans of the yo-yo thing wasn't that great. They loved their time in the Championship, but the Premier League seasons were pretty miserable for them. So yeah, I can definitely see the sort of mixed feelings, and if Ipswich, I dearly hope they do get over the line because they deserve it, and you never know when this opportunity would come again. But yeah, that would, as I say, sort of some crumbs of comfort that maybe the Championship's the place to be. That's where the real enjoyment comes from. But yeah, I mean, in terms of sort of keeping the group together, and it's such a special group that's going to go down in folklore amongst Ipswich Town fans, heroes now that have cemented their place sort of as Ipswich Town icons. And when teams like that do start to break up, it is sad. And I don't think there'd be wholesale changes, but there probably would be a few casualties along the way, as we saw last season with a few sort of going by. So yeah, I can see that point of view completely.
I think I've changed my mind on this, Stu, because when I asked this question, it was just after I'd watched the Man City Liverpool game, and I was genuinely in awe about the quality of that game and the ability of the players. I thought, put Ipswich against either of these sides, they're going to get murdered. And I was thinking, is that going to be good? Clearly, there's a huge step up from the Championship to the Premier League. Massive. But if ever a side has earned that, the opportunity to try and prove themselves again, having done what they've already done this season against all the odds, who's to say that they couldn't do it again in the Premier League.
We're very quick to talk about Burnley and Sheffield United and various negative examples here. Why couldn't they be a Brentford or a Brighton or be one of these clubs that can slowly grow and establish themselves? And every reason to believe they can with everything behind the scenes at the money, new injection of money recently, Mark Ashton driving things day to day at the club, the manager that they've got, you know, why not?
That's exactly it. That's the thing. That's what gives me the most confidence is they've got the ace card in McKenna, this guy who genuinely has done nothing wrong as a manager. And you know, the way he's got town playing, the things they're doing against the odds. They were in the Premier League. I wouldn't bet against him doing it again. So that's my thoughts on that now.
It's all down to recruitment. Yeah. Everything comes down to recruitment. And they've got a top-class coach in Kieran McKenna. The recruitment's been good, as we've seen. There's been far, far more hits than misses. But the higher up the level you go, you can't really afford to have sort of expensive misses. And that will be where the true worth is, how well they kind of... You're then getting into a world that Ipswich haven't been in for a while, which is recruiting from abroad. I don't know how good the network is in place. It's not that long ago that Mark Ashton was talking about sort of arriving at a club where he was kind of, what's the analogy he used, trying to sort of build an aeroplane in flight, and they didn't really have a recruitment team to speak of. And they brought in Sam Williams from Manchester United, but by all accounts, he might be heading back there. It's looking like at the moment, the club haven't commented on that yet, but that's all the noise coming out of Manchester at the moment. So that'll be the true test of it, is I think to progress. You only got to look at Brighton and what they've done with the South American market, and they keep pulling irons out of the fire, don't they? So that's become central to everything, I think.
I'd put AJ in charge recruitment. Yeah, a man who watches more football than physically seems possible. I bet he'd have a few thoughts to people to recruit. And final question this week, Stu, is about promotion. It comes from Cognitive Dissidence, which sounds like the sort of group that Matt Letizia might be involved in. Number one, he says, how, assuming it's a he, I don't know, how many points do you think Town will need to get promoted? And two, how many points out of nine do you think they will get? He says, my answers are 6 and 6. So 3 games left. We know if they win all 3, they're in the Premier League. But how many points do you think they'll need and how many points do you think they'll get, Stu? So we've got Hull, Coventry, Huddersfield as the final 3 games. All 3 of them at the moment potentially have something to play for.
Yeah. Might not be the case by the time those games come around. I said right at the very start, after the results of the last couple of days, that I think Leicester are going to be very difficult to catch. Even if Leicester get 6 points from their final 3 games, Ipswich, because of goal difference, would have to finish with a perfect record to overtake them. I'm not convinced Ipswich will get 9 from 9, if I'm honest. And I think Leicester will probably get, looking at their games, they got Southampton at home, obviously coming up in midweek, Preston away, Blackburn at home. I think they'd probably, regardless of what happens in the Southampton game, I think they back them to win those last 2 games just about. So I think maybe Leicester have gone. Southampton, again, if they win their final 3 games, that takes them to 93. Ipswich only, inverted commas, would need to take 5 points from their final 3 games to better that. And I can't see, that's a big ask for Southampton to win at Leicester and at Leeds. So I think they're gone. So it comes down to Ipswich v Leeds. Leeds go to Middlesbrough tonight, and I think that's a really tough game. They're a form side. I can't remember the unbeaten run that Michael Carrick's men are on. 9 now, and we've seen firsthand that they're a dangerous opponent. So I think if they drop points there tonight, and I have got that one down as a draw, the most they can get then is 7, which would take them to 94. With goal difference, Ipswich would need to beat that. That's 6 points to get them to 95. So I think Ipswich need 6 points from their final 3 games, 2 wins, and I think they'll do it.
He's gone big.
Very big. Look, it's important. Honestly, everyone keeps asking, the only thing that people talk about when you bump into them at the moment. What do they need? Can they do it? That's still a big ask, 6 points from three games. But Huddersfield at home, I know Ipswich have gone to Huddersfield and found them really tricky opposition and drawn there. They might be fighting for their lives on the final day of the season. I actually think that would be a good thing for Ipswich because Huddersfield won't come and, you know, hopefully they need to get a win and that, you know, it's not just a draw and they're not just parking the bus and being really awkward. And if they've got to come to Portman Road and try and take Ipswich on, I think that plays into their hands. So with the way Ipswich have been at home, especially in those sort of games, you'd have to back them in that. And then it's a case of can you win one of two tricky games on paper at Hull, at Coventry? As I say, hopefully both of them. I think certainly by the time the Coventry game comes around, maybe all of the sort of the physical, emotional energy they've put into this cup run, the fact that they'll be out of the top six race might play into Ipswich's hands. We'll see.
Mate, you've just said Ipswich Town are going to get promoted. Like, going back to Tom's question, and clearly there's a very, you know, this could happen. If we'd have sat at the start of the season and said, my prediction is Ipswich Town are going to get promoted, like every single one of the rest of us would surely have gone, what you've been drinking, that's not going to happen. But it really could. I mean, we're three games from it, mate. That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, but equally, Leeds could, you couldn't put it past Leeds. I know they've stumbled recently a little bit, but you couldn't put it past Leeds to go and win at Borough, QPR, and then beat Southampton at home. And then Ipswich are in a scenario where they've, I say, because of goal difference, they have got to win all three of their games. And that's a big, big ask as well. A big, big ask. So honestly, it's 50-50 for me. It's a flip of the coin. But when I say I think they can do it, I said it before, I think it's pure sort of manifesting. It's almost like thoughts become things. And that's just kind of where I'm at the moment. Ipswich fans, to me, I keep saying to like all the Ipswich fans I bump into, big smile talking about this, try and enjoy it. I can't enjoy it. It's all I think about. It's consuming my thoughts. I'm looking at the table every 5 seconds and the various fixtures left, and it's just so nerve-wracking. But I just think these moments come along so rarely, and you have to try and enjoy it if you can. But I know it's easier said than done.
The perfect place to finish this podcast, I think, Stu. You've just guaranteed Ipswich Town are going to get promoted. put that in your diary. Monday, April 22nd, Watson, with his 20,000 followers. There we go. Friends, that brings us to the end of Mailbag and the end of the show. We've done just over an hour. I hope you've enjoyed this rare two-man show with myself and the Funk Doctor. Stu, have you got anything else to mention before we go? Obviously, we'll be back hopefully later on this week to build up to Hull City away. 8 p.m. on Saturday. Hull of a trip, hull of a game, hull of a journey, Stu. Anything else to mention?
Come on, Middlesbrough.
Yeah,
come on, Middlesbrough. Up the Borough.
Up the Borough. Of course, you've got the Carrick dynamic there as well, haven't you, with him being best buds with Kieran. You'll be pleased to know, Stu, that I've just had an update from Duolingo. I'm now ninth in my league table of learning Italian. So a few more minutes.
Maybe sign out in Italian for us today?
Ciao. Arrivederci. All that kind of stuff.
Do they teach you to do it in a Borat style? Is that part of it?
Still working on my pronunciation. You do have to speak and have it recorded, which is quite good fun. And I get really into it, as you say, giving it the subconscious, like hand gestures and that kind of stuff. I've got all that down pat. I just need to be able to speak Italian now. Friends, that brings us to the end of the show. As I say, I hope you've enjoyed it. Just to remind support our sponsors, use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all their excellent clubber they've got there. And also follow us across all our social medias if you're cool and are down with the kids, as they say. Get on the TikToks. We're massive on TikToks, AJ tells me. We're also big on traditional social media, Facebook, Twitter/X. Anyone call it X? I don't know. And Instagram. And also, friends, leave us a 5-star review on the old iTunes because that just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts and just means more people can find us. And it's good for our egos as well. That brings us to the end of the show then, Watson. Anything else to mention? Final words from you?
No other business.
Excellent. From me then, all that's left to say is arrivederci.
Very nice.